Hello, welcome to a podcast by Progressus, which we are shooting on the occasion of the Singularity U Czech Summit, which Progressus is a proud partner of. My name is Tomáš Braverman, and I'm the ex-CEO of Heureka Group, the biggest e-commerce platform in 9 countries of the Czech Republic. Now, let me welcome our guest, who is Carlo van de Weijer. Did I pronounce it well?
Very well.
Thank you. I was afraid of that.
Thank you. No problem.
Carlo, thanks a lot for coming.
My pleasure.
Carlo is director of the strategic area Smart Mobility at Eindhoven University of Technology, member of several supervisory boards, and ex-TomTom worker, blah, blah, blah. Many things on your LinkedIn profile.
It's an unplanned career path, but I'm involved in a lot of interesting things. All about high tech, so it's a nice environment.
Carlo, yesterday I attended your presentation, which I have to say was really, really good. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
And its name was Where Are Flying Cars? Future of Mobility.
Yeah.
So let's start discussion about mobility, actually, and tell me.
And the flying cars.
Where are the flying cars?
I chose that title because it's actually the first time I use it, because people say that when they're not so impressed with new technology, they always say they promised us flying cars, and now we got 140 characters or a platform to exchange cat movies. You know, that's how people often express their somewhat disappointment on new technology process. But the thing is that people always wanted to fly individually. So we always were waiting on flying cars or whatever. And this is something that goes back to the Greek mythology when Icarus, he was given wings by the gods. And so he could fly individually. It's the dream of mankind. And then he came too close to the sun and he melted, so that didn't end up well. But still, we wanted to fly with them. Yeah, we want to have flying cars. But the thing is, if you look at practice, most mobility now is just cars and they're not flying. So I try to summarize what's going to change there.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the number of transports keeps increasing.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that it's some, in average, more than an hour of time spent while transporting, even during the COVID time, which was surprising to me. It's kind of some, facts.
It's good you picked that up, because it's actually, a lot of people say that mobility is just a means to come from A to B, but it is a purpose on its own. We just want to be mobile because evolution programmed us to be mobile for 1 hour and 50 minutes. That was the ideal time for hunting and gathering. Staying in your cave, you would starve, but walking around all day, it's too much energy use. So the optimum for the perfect hunting and gathering was 1 hour and 50 minutes. And that's if you look now at the behavior of people, they still do 1 hour and 50 minutes of mobility. That makes people most happy. And it's something you see always back. So people that work from home, et cetera, they tend to go biking in the weekend just to get to their mobility budget.
1 hour and a half.
And people that are on the road a lot, they tend to just read a book in the weekend or have very easy holidays to compensate for that one. And that's a thing. And indeed, in COVID times, we didn't have to go out to chase for food. It was brought home. You could all do your work at home. Then people start just walking around or taking a bike trip or just a car trip just from A to A instead of going somewhere. So that's a good thing to say. And the other constant what I said is that we keep on inventing more stuff to go further. So increased speed is also something that seems to be hardwired in our brains. We want to go farther and further and faster. And that's why you see actually in historical movement that our range keeps on increasing. Like now the world is at the feet of our new generation. That's a completely change with the former generation. And that will continue. Because that's the other dangerous thing that people think, is that at a certain point we will be able to stop that and get it back so that you just stay at home more. So that's not going to happen. So this degrowth movement, which has some reasons to want degrowth, but it's not going to happen. That's not going to change life. We can also not deny that there's a lot of problems. So we have to innovate ourselves out of trouble. That's for any industry, but certainly also for mobility.
Yeah. But speaking of evolvement and development, what is definitely hot in transportation are the electric cars.
Yeah.
We're in the Czech Republic, and Czech Republic are, say, electro-pessimists. By the way, yesterday I googled that the share of the electric cars in the Czech Republic is only 2.1%, and we are last but one, The only country which is worse in the European Union is our brothers Slovakia. But anyway, the pessimists usually say, you know, like it's expensive or it produces emissions anyway, you know, batteries are not sustainable. So what do you reply to these people?
I was the biggest pessimist as well. We started a bit earlier in the Netherlands, and after Norway, we were maybe second in Europe, so at the other side. But maybe I think what Czech is doing is not, don't tell anyone, but maybe it's a good strategy. Just wait until these things get very cheap and then jump in, then you don't have to pay all the expensive vehicles in the beginning, because that's what's happening. That's why electric vehicles will happen. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be the cheapest of all. So there's a lot of yes, but, or yes, electric vehicles, but, and then comes a list from, yeah, the range is not enough, and the batteries, and child labor, and all this kind of stuff. And I just keep that discussion short, because it's either not true, or it is true, but it will be solved, or it is true, and might not be solved, but it's still better than the alternative. But it actually doesn't matter, because in a couple of years, they will be much cheaper than the gasoline-powered cars. And then I'm quite sure that also all these pessimists will follow. And I'm the biggest petrol head maybe in the Netherlands. So I started driving electric 12 years ago just to prove that it's not working.
But you fell in love, right?
I'm convinced at a certain moment, because all this range anxiety and all the other stuff, it drove better. It was, you just have to change just a little bit and you get something that's much better back for it. And especially if it's going to be much cheaper, which it will.
It has to do with the development curve, right?
Yeah. And actually, it's also, if you produce more of a certain product, it always gets cheaper.
Economics
like the
scale.
Televisions. Yeah, it's the law of right or something. It's Wright's law. But if you produce twice as much from a certain product, the price goes down with 15% to 20%. That happened to televisions. It was only for the rich people, say 70 years ago. But because they bought one, price went down a little bit. The middle class could afford a television. And now the poorest people have the biggest screens for some reason. I don't know how that works, but that will happen. That happened to phones, that happened to anything. And it will happen to electric cars as well. They will be very cheap.
What do you think of the Chinese cars? Now it's been discussed very much that they're capable of producing it very cheaply. Yeah. By the way, probably because of it's being subsidized by the government, partly.
I'm not sure if that's true. If that's true, we have to take care and compensate for that one. You have to keep an honest playing field, a level playing field. On the other side, they are able to produce cheap stuff in any industry. So maybe I do believe they will be probably a bit cheaper. They will grow if also their wages will grow, etc. But they are very effective in producing cars. And contrary to what some people claim from Made in China, they are very good cars. I sensed them, I felt them, I've driven them a little bit, but impressive.
GM or
the BYDs. By the way, this morning it was announced that BYD surpassed Tesla with the sales figures in September.
Wow.
It's impressive what's happening from China. It's a wake-up call for the European industry.
Absolutely.
But I think European industry will catch up. And I'm a firm belief that they will also. But they needed this wake-up call.
Protect the European market?
I would protect it for instance, if indeed these cars are subsidized, and you have to really take care that you have to protect the industry for at least a level playing field. But don't give them benefits because they were maybe a little bit too late. That was, if they stick to the wrong technology for a large time, it's their fault and they should suffer a bit as well. But we should not, and they probably will not die. They will catch up.
So what is actually connected to the electric cars is the autopilot. As far as I know, Tesla's autopilot is working pretty well in the States, on the highways, and in some beta in the towns. In the European Union, it's not legally allowed. I have a hypothesis that it's because BMW and Mercedes have not developed it yet. So kind of the European Union is waiting for them to have it done, and only after that it will be allowed. But just a hypothesis. What do you think, actually?
I can counter that one probably, because actually, in a matter of fact, BMW and Mercedes are heading Tesla from a legal perspective, because it's a difference that you have five different levels of automation. Level zero is just a normal car. Level five, there's not even a steering wheel. That's the full automated car. Now, you have all these levels, and but it's very important from level 2 to 3. Level 2 is a car that supports you every now and then, drives itself, but you still are responsible as a driver. So you have to take care, keep your hands on the wheel, and always be ready there. That's a little bit of a dangerous zone, but okay, that's what a lot of cars have. That's intelligent cruise control with a little bit of steering, that's already...
I have it in my BMW, but I switched it off. I'm the driver.
Just kidding. Your next BMW, you're not going to switch it off.
I will not be allowed, probably.
They will be better and better and better. And in the first time, they're annoying. And there's a, well, stop interfering with
the I'm always afraid of the software update that it will not allow me to have these things switched off.
Yeah, that's true. But that will not happen before. They're so good that you do know it. There are a lot of systems in your car that you cannot switch off that you not even know that they're there and they save your life. That's the best system. Yeah. And there will be more and more of that one. But this is level 2. You still are the responsible driver. If an accident happens, it's you to blame. Level 3 is the very important thing that at certain moments, the car will take over and takes over responsibility as well. And as a matter of fact, BMW and Mercedes have these cars now approved. Tesla is still in level 2, also in the United States.
Really?
You're always responsible as a driver. Mm-hmm. So they are very far ahead in preparing because they got a lot of data. So their self-driving is getting better and better and better. But it's still, you're responsible as a driver. Now, there are other Cruise and Waymo, they are the self-driving taxi, the robo-taxi. They drive level 4 or 5-ish. So you can just sit in the back and they taxi you around San Francisco and some other cities already. That's another thing, that's a full self-driving car. But a car that just takes over and takes over responsibility is not really there yet, except for the Mercedes and BMW. That does it only in very, very certain circumstances. Mm. During the day, on the highway, during a traffic jam, until a certain speed. But yet, the protectionism is less an issue here.
Mm. It's good to hear, by the way. I didn't know that. I'm happy to hear that.
The thing is, by the way, is that it's, a lot of people say, but you don't have to drive anymore. Yeah, still, you have. I think if you have a car that takes over driving to these very boring, long highway trips, and that's an important one you probably recognize, and at least my car does that, it self-drives during a traffic jam. And that's an option, that's a comfort option, that you don't want to miss once you have experienced that, because then you don't mind the traffic jam so much anymore, I can assure you, you might recognize. So it's just driving, you can do some apps, etc. That's already allowed in certain cars. So that's the better
Absolutely.
Car. That's
I
the better
agree
car.
With that.
So you take the nasty bits out of driving, and the danger is, combined with what I just said, that cars get much cheaper, that the car is going to be more popular even than now, because they're more comfortable, they're going to get cheaper, they're going to go. So they're going to also get much safer because these technology help you to prevent and to have an accident. So what's there not to like of cars in the future? Now, the answer to that is that cars pollute cities with their existence, with their being there. So they're from a spacious level, we cannot overcrowd our cities even more with cars. That's the thing not to like about cars. But all the other stuff, the negative points of cars, are disappearing because of innovation.
By the way, the transport in general is in charge of some 16% of the global pollution, as far as I know, which is much more than the farting cows. So,
It's depending which molecule that you look at. Because there always, if you see from the nitrogen oxides or the particulate matter or the CO2, it's depending on which pollution that you get. But the most being discussed is, of course, the climate warming CO2.
Yeah.
And that's indeed between 15 and 20% of the total energy use and CO2 emissions.
So it's pretty big.
It's anyway, 20%. Yeah.
What car do you have actually now?
I have my first car.
I hope you will not say that it's a Hemi 5.7 8-cylinder.
I've got these kind of, I say this. These dirty hobbies. I still have my first car, which from an environmental perspective that you don't have to take it to the scrapyard. But that's the thing that I drove as a student, a 1965 Peugeot, and I still own that one. I did equip it with some safety technologies, by the way. So just to make sure that you can also... So I have a 1965 Peugeot with a camera that helps me staying in line. So with
really?
A small warning system, just to prove that you can also equip old cars with retrofit safety systems. So that's one car, but I drive electric, so don't worry. Most miles are being done electric, and I drive a lot by train as well still.
Let's discuss a little bit the mobility in towns, because it's pretty specific, you know.
That's where the problem, because if these cars get popular, it's a good thing for outside the town. In the town, that's where the problems will occur.
And it's pretty specific. We have other different like means of transportation, like public transportation, bikes. For example, I in Prague, I usually drive an electric bike.
Oh, did you? Oh, come on. Prague, I don't see
hilly.
Many
Prague
here.
Is hilly. Not so many, yeah. Prague is hilly. So if you don't want to get sweaty.
A normal bike is not an option.
Yeah, it's not because you don't want to get sweaty, yeah. And so I have an electric town bike. I love it. It takes me some 10 minutes to get from home to work. And I truly love it. No traffic jams. I get a fresh air. I relax. I really love it. But like you said, it's not many of us. So what do you think is the future of the town mobility?
So the thing is, what you do by biking is that you save the government an enormous amount of energy. Money, actually. Say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you save energy, but you save them also a lot of budget and money. Because you do not rely on public transport, which is expensive to organize. Mm-hmm. You don't possess a lot of space with a car, mm-hmm. so you leave that to other people. So all these societal costs of mobility, you don't have to charge them with that. Mm-hmm. So you are saving yourself money because it's a relatively cheap option, and you're also saving the government a lot of money. And because of this, you see worldwide, and sorry that Prague is lagging a little bit behind, but again,
it is.
Wait until all the other ones find out how not to do it, and then you can just with electric cars.
We'll do it in the bad way anyway.
But no, I don't know. Come on. You do a lot of things good. Look at your city, my gosh. What a quality of life here. That's incredible. But you see now more and more cities making room for bikes. And that's not because, oh, it's so nice and good for the environment. Look, the city looks better, which it does. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly because it saves an enormous amount of money, both for the users as well as for the government. So it pays off to invest, to facilitate you a little bit more, to help you a little bit more, because it's very dangerous for you to drive with a bike. So separate bike lanes and all this kind of stuff, they will appear. I can assure you within now and 20 years, and I hope it's a little bit quicker, they will appear also in Prague infrastructure, because it's by far the best thing to do for your city. It takes less capacity, it's safer, it's good for the environment. And the fact that the government owns money is also a secondary thing, because you are much healthier because you bike. And therefore, you're one day less sick per year, etc. And the economical benefits is more than it costs to just get the infrastructure there. And if they can save on public transport, it's another huge amount of money that comes into the government, at the government. So, yeah, you should be pampered more and facilitated more because of your good behavior.
I think there's a big discussion in the Czech Republic, especially in Prague, about infrastructure, because the infrastructure is being created, but many people complain about that. Many people say, look, there is the infrastructure, but nobody uses that. So it's like chicken and egg problem, you know?
That's true, but it's like once you have some beautiful bridges, huh?
Yes.
And before they put the bridge, I think the Karlsbrück is maybe the first one, the Charles Bridge. But anyhow, before they put the bridge, there was not a lot of people swimming from the one side to the other side. So you can also say, okay, there's nobody swimming there, so why put a bridge? It's until you put the bridge there that at a certain moment people find, oh, this is easier, and they start using it, and then trade starts running, and then the bridge is used massively. You have to build another one. And that's with biking. You can say, oh, there's no bikes, let's not make an infrastructure. No, there were no swimmers before there was a bridge. So you should, this chicken and egg, it should begin with the infrastructure, and then the eggs or the chicken, whatever you call one or the other, they will follow.
I fully agree. Okay, Carlo, last question about the mobility. Okay. Yesterday you mentioned actually the aviation, it appears, or it seems that actually in the aviation, it's not technically possible to stop using the aviation fuel, which is made of oil, right?
Yes, exactly.
But actually, I was surprised that yesterday you showed that it's not true.
No, it will be solved. Like any technical problem will be solved. We have to innovate ourselves, our problem. We're not going to fly less. This flying shame, etc. Everybody says, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to fly less. Any research that's being done, the people that say that they're going to fly less, it shows that they just fly more. Mm. And they say, yeah, it's cheap because it's subsidized. Yeah, it's subsidized a bit, but it's by far not as much subsidized as train and even cars, etc. That's the first thing. The other thing, we will have sooner or later, we will have sustainable aviation fuels, which means fuels that are made out of electricity or crops, but That's not scalable. So in due course, we will take CO2 out of the air, we take purified water, we take electricity, we make hydrogen from that one, we glue that together, mix it up. We're doing that already for 100 years, and make an artificial kind of kerosene of that. When you use it, it produces CO2 and water, but to the molecule, exact the same amount that you grab out of the air by producing the fuel, which means it's a circular fuel. And if you have done that, the enormous advantages also for the environment of flying, which might sound a little bit counterintuitive, but the thing is that for flying, you only need a little bit of infrastructure on the one side and a little bit of infrastructure at the other side. And there's a little bit of noise problem around that point. So yes, that's still a problem. You have to make them more silent, but at least that's it. And the entire road between that, you don't have to send people out of houses because there's a large infrastructure necessary. And that's why flying, if we tackle this CO2 problem, flying is by far the most sustainable way of transport in the future. And people underestimate that. So they say, okay, we have to stop flying. We have to invest in rails. But don't do that, because before the rail lines are there, the flying is so much more sustainable, which takes 20 years. And in 2050, the European Union already had declared that the admixture, because you can have these new fuels, you can mix this with the fossil fuels, but it has to be already 70% in 2050. So then scale will come up. You will have gigantic fuel factories, probably in sunny countries where the electricity is very cheap. And they will produce the fuels, but it will be a sustainable fuel. And by that time, when scale comes up, these fuel might in due course be even cheaper than the fuels, than the fossil fuels. And this is a new thing that we should really realize, that the Stone Age didn't end because we didn't have any stones, and the fossil fuel will end long before we're out of fossil fuels. We will have something better before that time. Just at a certain moment, we had better tools than stones.
This is truly interesting, Carlo, interesting. And I'm glad to hear it, because like you said, people tend to be ashamed of flying, which is not correct.
We should be ashamed of training in due course. Train shame instead of fly shame.
That's very interesting. Yeah. By the way, a couple of days ago, I heard that every day we consume, it's an unbelievable number, 100 million barrels every day.
Of oil.
Yeah. Of oil.
We're addicted to something that pollutes ourselves, pollutes the political climate, pollutes everything. It's a venom. We have to get rid of it.
Yeah,
but not by saying we are not going to use anything anymore and we are going to back living in cages. That's not going to happen. We have to come up with an alternative for it. And it's possible. And it requires a ridiculous, overwhelming number of solar panels and carbon capture systems, etc. And that's a lot, but it's not impossible. So it's about 100,000 square kilometers of solar cells in order to make the fuels. That's massive, immense, but it's not impossible. Hey, we're going to produce 1 billion cars in the next 10 years, 1 billion automobiles. Mankind can do such a thing, it's far more easier than to make the entire energy system sustainable.
Yeah, it's doable. It's just a matter of time, effort, and money. That's it.
Yeah, and focus. And that's what European Union, they said, okay, it has to be 70% of these new fuels in 2050, so that at least these markets will come up automatically. This little push is necessary, but like electric vehicles, a little bit of push is necessary in the beginning, but at a certain moment, it's a cheaper one, and nobody will go back to the other technology because it's the better stuff. And that's why bicycle also needs a little bit of push. And people, look what happens in Paris. It's incredible what happened there with the number of bikes compared to 7 years ago. It's incredible. It can easily be done. Much faster as we in the Netherlands transferred to biking, because there was no bike 40 years ago. Now we're a biking country, but we didn't used to be so. So come and learn the lessons from Paris and from us and from all the other ones. So you're clever as Czech, and be just a little bit modest and be a little bit skeptical. And as soon as you just steal it from other countries.
We'll send our politicians there.
You're very welcome.
Carlo, we have to speed up, but the discussion is truly interesting. Let's move on. Today you're going to have a presentation on the topic work and leadership in AI future. So what are you going to speak about?
Yeah. So I always worked in the mobility arena, but the last five years ago, the university where I worked part-time, they asked me to set up an AI institute. So now I'm all involved in artificial intelligence. And yeah, seeing that, and also having a background in leading company, I had labs of 300 to 400 people at a certain moment I was responsible for. So I see HR also changing because of this new cooperation we have with robots. And what I'm going to present this afternoon is that there's, to my point of view, the distinction between what robots have to do and we have to do is that all the coloring inside the line kind of jobs, the regulatory repetitive jobs, but everything that just is obeying the rules, that's what the robots are good at. The robots are not so good at coloring outside the lines and being flexible, etc. And I think we should not allow robots, these machines, they're going to be 1,000 times more intelligent, 1,000,000 times more intelligent than we are. Let them just color inside the lines, otherwise it gets dangerous. Mm. So the only added value that we have in the future is that we can color outside the lines. That's with some moral and ethical compass in our heads. That's what makes us human. And that's, if you see that, then also work and leadership will change. Because how do you set up an HR contract, you know, a working contract, if you just expect people to not follow the rules? How is an HR handbook will look like? And that's going to totally change that you and probably have to hire people. You just ask people, you have two rules. It's use your common sense and do that actually in the benefit of the company. So the thing is, leadership is what you do, that people know where the benefit of the company is. You have to give them direction and you have to give them energy so that they can walk. You have to facilitate them doing that, but not prescribe them how much days off they have. If somebody dies in the family, all these kind of rules, you have to be flexible with all this nonsense kind of stuff. And that's a new leadership that is based on vision and authenticity, because they have to follow you and they have to trust you on that one. So in the old days, it was just because you're the boss and you got to say what's happening. That's not leadership anymore. It's giving direction and yeah, bringing light in the end of the tunnel, because people have to keep on walking.
Mm. You have to say this to my wife, who's always mad at me that I'm breaking the rules. So I'll tell her, no, that differentiates me from the robots.
Yes, okay, yes, please. That's the right reaction. Be happy that you're not married to a robot.
Exactly.
But try to marry a robot for 1 year and you probably will come back. She fell in love with you, not because you obeyed the rules.
True. Yeah.
So so probably if she complains like this, it's just her expression of loving you.
Oh, yeah.
So I fixed your marriage as well now. That's also good.
Carlo, you worked at TomTom. Some time ago already.
Yeah, it's a couple of years ago. I worked there for 12 years or something.
Yeah. But actually, I wanted to ask how it looks with TomTom, because from my perspective, you know, the navigation systems like TomTom and Navigon and Garmin start to have serious problems at the time when Google actually made their navigation systems for free to the users. And I think Garmin kind of overcame it by focusing on
leisure,
on the watches, you know, and sport. But I haven't seen TomTom recently very much. Do you know how they're doing?
And they're doing fine. Very, very well, by the way. The thing is that Garmin indeed very, very successfully moved to some more the luxury markets and the sport markets and the leisure market. TomTom decided actually, because they were focusing on cars and automotive, so TomTom made the wise move to change from business to consumer to business to business. Mm-hmm. That means that indeed you as a consumer will not see it so much. But actually, practically every car that you buy nowadays, every brand has TomTom in it.
Really?
But then white labeled and you don't see it. So then most probably the traffic information might be from TomTom, or the map, or the navigation software. So then they used to be already a software company, and then all of a sudden this device came and they get berserk, etc. So their revenue, now they only sell the software and the device is already in the car. And that's not only for cars, that's also for cell phones and all kind of other applications that have TomTom inside. So if you check, for instance, your Apple Maps, and they navigate with a lot of TomTom intelligence.
Really?
Yeah, so that's a nice thing, how a company can change from a business to consumer to a business to business. And I'm quite proud of how I see that TomTom is doing in that area. So the revenue got a little bit down because they don't have to shift the boxes, but the added value went up because it's a relatively higher margin market.
Were you still there when you made this big shift or transformation?
I was when I joined, because I had this lab of about 300 people doing software, and that's what was for Siemens. And when Siemens wanted to sell all the automotive business, we actually, in good cooperation with Siemens, decided that maybe the site that I was responsible for in Eindhoven, we picked that up and brought it to TomTom. And this site had automotive experience, which was totally different. So I, that was one of the beginning things that TomTom could make this move towards business to business by taking over a lot of people with experience in that matter. And nowadays, TomTom does a lot of revenue in this automotive area. So I did get a glimpse of what happened there, yeah. But it was an interesting thing. And it was also because TomTom, I really think TomTom has very, very strong leadership in that one. To just as I just said, they know where to focus on and give you a lot of freedom how to go there. That's what I learned, how corporates really can move in this new kind of leadership. And that's how I experienced TomTom. I still think it's a fantastic company.
Mm. Where are they from, actually?
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. Netherlands. Okay. No. Nice to hear. Hey, really nice.
And I have the big site in Eindhoven as well, which used to be my lab, and said, well, that's where they do the automotive business. But no, it's an Amsterdam-based company, yeah.
It's great to hear that a European country managed to compete with the American
every animals. Now and then. And they're still strong there, and their traffic information is still top level, so they're doing well. And we have some more. We have Spotify's, and we have some others as Europe's, and more will follow.
Hopefully some Czech will follow too. But we have some strong tech companies too.
Yeah, you're a good country. Your quality of life is so good that you...
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
You attract people here as well with the quality of living. That's in the end what...
That's what I think is the most crucial. That's what I actually want the politician to do, to create the environment where we will attract the global talents, and everything else will come then naturally.
It is true. And let's let other people call Europe a museum, you know, but the museum is the ideal location to feel well. So I don't see that as an insult, as long as you attract good people and you have some assets here that, and I don't even mean the cheap and very good beer here, but it's, the quality of living is good.
Yeah, so
you have to really cherish that, because that's in the end what makes you a successful company.
I would say the combination of freedom and security, that's what I love about the Czech Republic and especially Prague the most.
Okay, cheers. Cheers on that.
And the beer, of course.
That's also...
last question, a more philosophical one. Will the world be better in 100 years' time or not, and why?
Yeah, for sure. I do not see why, because everybody complains that all things are get better and you know, you look at the news, it's war, it's all right. We had much more wars and we had much more problems the old days, but we didn't have a camera sitting in front of the rocket that you could just witness what happens in the explosion, you know? That's what we see now. We see everything around the world. So we think that danger is everywhere, but the world is safer and a better place than ever. And that's because of technology and the repetitive innovation that you get from better technology can make better technology, etc. Now, it might get dangerous when these robots will be smarter than us, but I think in the end, always the benefits of technology have farly overclassed the negative side effects that technology always has. And I do not see a single reason why that would be changing in the next 100 years. So yes, the world will be much better. Just as we cannot imagine that 100 years ago we lived without running hot water and heating, you know, in the houses. But 100 years ago we thought oh my gosh, we have a roof. We didn't have that 100 years ago. So how could people live without a roof? In 100 years, we cannot imagine that we now live without a Brazilian bubs or something that has to be invented. I don't know what. But it's not there and we have perfect living now. But more stuff will come that makes our life fantastic.
Mm. Thanks, Carlo, for not only the positive and optimistic end, but actually thanks for the optimistic information you gave us.
Okay.
It was great. Thank you.
I meant everything I said, so let's hope real. Let's look back in 100 years from now on what we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking forward to hearing your today's presentation,
okay.
By the way.
So in 100 years, we'll have a Pivo here.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.